On the bottom of Daf Hey Amud Aleph, Omar Rab Lozar, Omar Rab Chanina. And it's a question exactly what Rebbe did. There could be different versions, if you recall. Rebbe Nata Natiya B'Purim. It sounds like he allowed doing Malacha on Purim. Now we're on Hey Amud Beis. V'rochatz B'Krona Shal Tzipori B'Shevasar B'Tamos. And he even publicly washed himself on Shavasa B'Tamos. Now that itself is not so revolutionary, because in fact we don't accept the Chamisha Inuyim on Shavasa B'Tamos, and Rebbe wanted to publicize this. But this is the most radical point, is Ubikesh Lakar Tisha B'Av. He wanted to completely undermine Tisha B'Av. Tosfos is unwilling to accept this straightforward kipshuto, because we have a principle that Ein Bezdin Yochol Levatos Divrei Chaveiro Ad She'egalu Mimenu B'Chochma U'Vaminyan. And furthermore, the Gemara speaks about the fact that somebody who eats and drinks on Tisha B'Av is Eino Roa Ben Chamosa. So Tosfos tries to postulate, as we discussed the great length last week, that Rebbe didn't want to completely undermine Tisha B'Av. He wanted to cut it down, so there would still be some vestige of the original Takana. But the Chachamim did not accept it. Amar Lefanav Rebbe Abba Bar Zavda. Rabbi Lo Kach Hoya Maisa. This is where you have the Tovim Ushnayim Menachet. You remember that we spoke about at the end of last week's Shia. And that is that Rabbi Abba clarified this in front of his Rebbe, Rabbi Lazar, to make sure that he didn't make a mistake. The transmission of exactly what happened in the case of Rebbe is a little bit inaccurate, he says. But rather, Elatisha Rav Shechalios B'Shabbos Abba, the case was that Tisha B'Av overlapped with Shabbos. And the question is there such a thing as Dichui in the case of Tisha B'Av, to observe Tisha B'Av on Sunday? Dechinu li'achar Shabbos. And Rebbe was upset about this. Omar Rebbe, Ho'il v'nidcha yidocha. There's no such thing as observing Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av. It's all or nothing. Either you observe Tisha B'Av on the 9th of Av, or there's no Tisha B'Av whatsoever. That was Rebbe's point. Now, Rebbe didn't think that it was part of the original Takana that there would be another day on which they would fast, and therefore he felt that the original Takana is not binding as far as Asiri B'Av is concerned. Then it depends upon whether the people would accept upon themselves such a minhag to observe Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av, and Rebbe said, no, we're not willing to accept such a minhag. And they didn't agree. So again, now that we have the clarification of Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, it doesn't mean Chas Shalom that Rebbe wanted to completely undermine Tisha B'Av, but rather he didn't accept Tisha B'Av Dochu. And Kari Alei, there they quoted the pasuk in Koheles, Tovim Ashtayim Min Ha'Ech. Okay. Now we get to the main sugya for today. Is there an Isur Malacha on Tisha B'Av? So the Gemara asks, V'Rebbe Hechi Nata Netiyah B'Purim V'Atani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef darshins the pasuk in the Megillah. It says, Simcha U'Mishta V'Yom Tov. Three categories. Simcha malamich asurim behespi v'tainis. Mishteh malamich asurim v'tainis. I'm sorry. Simcha malamich asurim behespi. Mishteh malamich asurim v'tainis. And yantiv malamich asurim asiyas malocha. So the Gemara answers, no. Rebbe also knew very well that there's an isur malocha on Purim. El Rebbe bar ar besar avi. Rebbe was in an open city. V'chinota v'chamesar nota. But he wanted to demonstrate that for someone who lives in the Prozos, he doesn't have any obligation to observe Purim on the 15th. That's singled out for the Mukafos Chomer. So Gemara says, Amy, how can you tell me that Rebbe observed Purim on the 14th? For Rebbe v'tveria havu, tveria mukefes chomim mimos yashu ben nun hava. So right now the Gemara assumes that Tveria was certainly a krach, and therefore Rebbe, insofar as he lived in the Tveria, would have to observe Purim on the 15th. So then the Gemara says, let's switch it around. Ella, Rebbe bar chamisar havi, Rebbe would observe Purim on the 15th, v'chinota, and he wanted to demonstrate that he's not enjoined from doing melacha bar besar havi, and therefore he planted the tree on the 14th. So Gemara now asks, Umi pshita le de Tveria mukefes chom mos yeshu v'nu v'chizki akari b'tveria bar basar b'chamisha sar, shemesafkale I mukefes chom mos yeshu v'nu hi imlo. In other words, it would seem that if Rebbe was absolutely certain about this, and he observed Purim on the 15th under the premise that Tveri has the status of a Mukefes Chom Mos Yeshua, how could it be in a later generation Chizkiah would have doubts about it? I mean, Chizkiah should have known the tradition from Rebbe, and therefore it's safe to assume the Gemara thinks that if Chizkiah had doubts about the status of Tveri, then Rebbe before him likewise had doubts. So Gemara says, no, L'Chizkiah Mesafkalei L'Rebbe Pshitalei. And the Gemara later on is going to analyze why Chizkiah thought that Rebbe's sheet about Tveri was not so posh. That there is room to argue that Tveria, we'll soon see, was surrounded on three sides, but not on all four sides. So the Gemara says, wait a second, I have a problem. Because of Megillah's Tainus, and the Gemara assumes that if Purim is listed in Megillah's Tainus, it must be telling me a chiddush. It can't be telling me that we have to observe the 2 days of the 14th and the 15th as Purim. I mean, that's written explicitly in the Megillah. So why would Megillah's Tainus have to record Purim on that list? Is it really simple that Tveria's Mukefes Chom Mos Yeshu Ben Nun is and therefore the only Isur Melacha would be applicable on the 14th Umishari, but would it be mutter in fact to do Melacha on the 14th for somebody who lives in Tveria? But Megillas Tainus, it's listed in Megillas Tainus as Yom Arbasar, as Yom Chamishasar, Yome Puria Inun. There's no hesped on these 2 days. And now the Gemara is implying, which Rav is going to come to answer, why would the Bryson Megillas Tainus bother listing these 2 days as Isur hesped? I mean, it's written explicitly in the Tanakh. The Omar Rav lo mitzucha el lesser shel ze baze be'es shel ze baze. The thrust of this braisa is to teach you that the Isur Hesped applies for all people, whether you live in Tel Aviv and you want to bury the dead and give a Hesped on the 15th, or you live in Yerushalayim and you want to give a Hesped on the 14th. In all cases, there's an Isur Hesped. So everybody gets 2 days of Purim. The only difference is Megillah, that these will read a Megillah on the 14th, these on the 15th. So Gemara says, Hani, Mili, you're right. Rava gives us a very big chiddush in this price of Megillas Tainus, but that's only as far as Hesped v'Tainus, Aval Melacha Yom Echad v'Sulo. As far as the Isur Melacha is concerned, that depends on the full brunt of, so to speak, of the Yontif, meaning the day of Purim. When is the day of Purim? And the answer is the day of Purim itself is on the 14th for the Prozim and the 15th for the Krochim. There's no overlap here. Hesped B'tainis, that Hesped B'tainis means if you have a day on the Jewish calendar that commemorates a certain kind of a miracle, even if it's not your miracle, but it was established as such, then there's an Isur Hesped B'tainis. I could be in a Prozim, I could be in Yudalit, and that's my Purim, but yet I will observe an Isur Hesped B'tainis even on Tesvav, because of the miracle that happened morning on Tesvav. So it comes out, according to what we're holding now, is that the Braisa in Megillas Tainus is telling us that as far as Isur Hesped B'tainis is concerned, that applies to all of Klal Yisrael on both Yudalid and Tesvav without any distinction. As far as Megillah is concerned, the people in the Prozim will read on the 14th and the people in the Krachim will read on the 15th. And now if you ask me when exactly is the day of Purim, and the answer is, you might think the day of Purim is dragged along, is generated by Iser Hesped V'Tainus. The Bryce in Megillus Tainus establishes that there's an Iser Hesped V'Tainus even for those in the Prozim on the 15th and vice versa. No, but as far as Malacha is concerned, the Iser Malacha is dependent upon the Tzumo Shel Yom, so to speak. Now, Rabosa, if you don't mind, let me say a few words about what I mean by Tzumo Shel Yom. I mean, obviously, Purim is not it's not a day that's invested with Kedushas Hayom. It's not a yontif in the full sense. But the answer is, the Meiri says, get this, the Meiri says, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes it l'halacha, that if you don't have a Megillah on Purim, then you make a Shechiyonu. Now, why would you make the Shechiyonu? We know that the Shechiyonu on all Yom Tovim, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and on a day that's not it's not vested with a Kiddush Hayom, you would make Shechiyonu on the new mitzvah. But in the case of Megillah, if he doesn't have a Megillah, so what's going to justify a Shechiyonu? So the Meiri says that the Yom itself justifies Shechiyonu, meaning you don't need for Shechiyonu the Zman that's invested with Kiddush Hayom, as long as the Zman is vested with any sort of Isurim, like for example in this case, we have Iser Hesped, we have Iser Tainis, we have Iser Malacha, we have a Mitzvah Megillah, all these together, plus other mitzvahs of the day, that means that all of this whole package is generated by the Tzumo Shel Yom. And Shechiyonu V'Kimonu V'Yonu L'Zman, as it's a special Zman. So if you ask me, when is the special Zman? The answer is, that's on the day of all the mitzvahs hayom, you know, Megillah and everything else, Sechir Nasir, what we call. If you ask me about Iser Hesped V'Tainis, that's already a different concept. We have many days during the course of the year which are also Hesped V'Tainis, and yet we would not say that they're you know, we don't make a Shechiyonu Rosh Chodesh. You know, it's Rosh Chodesh, with all due respect, it's a very important day in the Beis Hamikdash especially, but we don't make a Shechiyonu. It doesn't have a special Kedushas Hazman or even a Yontif status, and yet there's no Hesped V'Tainis on Rosh Chodesh. And so too the Megillus Tainis gives us a whole list of different days during the course of the year in which there's an Iser Hesped V'Tainis. But that doesn't mean that it's Purim. Just because there's an Iser Hesped V'Tainis doesn't mean it's Purim. And then Afkamina is going to be Iser Malacha. That Iser Malacha depends on Purim, whereas Hesped V'Tainis depends upon some sort of Yemei HaPurim, you know, with 2 days, and it's a package deal because of the great miracle that happened here or happened there. So it comes out just l'maskon at this point that the Rebbe is of the opinion that you're allowed to do Malach on the other day, if you follow what I mean. Eini, so the Gemara asks, is this really so that the Isur Malacha really depends upon the day of Purim with the Kriyas HaMegillah and so forth? For Rav Chazila, who gavad avikos shodi kisna v'puraya, Rav got very upset at a certain person that he witnessed him, that he was planting, in this case, flax on Purim. The light day, he gave him a whammy, meaning that he shouldn't have any benefit from this Malacha. And in fact, Rav's liet came to fruition. V'lot samach kisna, and on that year, none of his flax crop grew. So you see that Rav held that now there's no rhyme or reason here, Abosai. Why the Gemara assumes that Rav gave this guy a whammy because he did malach on the other day? I mean, he was shayach to Yudalit and he did malach on Tesvav. The Gemara in fact rejects this. Also, Bar Yoma. In other words, you want to assume that this guy was a prozi and he did malacha by planting flax on the 15th, and Rav gave him a whammy. That's not necessarily so. It was Bar Yomia. He planted it on the 14th, on Purim itself. The Havamina of the Gemara, by the way, has no justification. I would say in this case, again, this is don't quote me on this, but this is one of the cases where the Gemara is just sort of clarifying something. It's not really. See, he has a whole footnote here. He says, "Tzarch bir mahoisa havamina shalagumor." So that some sofer, again, just for the sake of mentioning it again, it's really what we call Yesh Liyashi B'Dochak, is very far out. But some sofer wants to say that Pishtan, because of the nature of the agricultural nature of Pishtan, is something that's planted outside the city. So therefore, Rav doesn't usually go outside the city, especially not on Purim. So it must have been the day after Purim. Okay, yeah. Just telling you how far the Samsung wants to go here to try to figure out what the Havamina of the Gemara was. Alright, Rabba Bere de Rav Amar, Afilu Tema Biyome, even if you want to tell me that Rav, in fact, was Notea on the day of Kriya, meaning he did Malacha on Purim itself, Tested the Tainis Kibu Alayu, Malacha Lo Kibu Alayu. Now this is very interesting. He's Rebbe, according to this presentation of Rava, is radically changing our understanding of the drasha of Rav Yosef. If you remember, we started today with the drasha of Rav Yosef, and when the days are called Yontif, it means Issa Malacha, and that's what we've been assuming straight through today. Uh-huh. Now the Gemara is departing from that assumption. The Gemara is saying, yeah, maybe originally at the beginning of the process, They did establish Purim as a day of Issa Malacha, but at the end of the day, that Kabbalah was not it didn't have any long shelf life to it, if you follow what I mean. It dissipated at some point. And therefore, let's read the Psukim now in a different light. Demikara, says Rabbi Ksiv, if you look earlier in the Perek, in that ninth chapter of Megillah, says it says Simcha Mishtav Yomtiv. And that's the original ideal conception of how Purim was meant to be. But Ulbasov, you read the end of the chapter, when it talks about Kibu v'Kibu Aleihem, what did exactly the Jewish people accept upon themselves? And the answer is Lasos Sasam Yemei Mishta v'Simcha. And the Megillah, in a very abstruse, a very obvious way, omits mention of Yontiv. Yontiv Loksiv. Why did the Megillah drop the ball on Yontiv? And the answer is because, as far as Dori Doris is concerned, they did not accept the Purim as a day of Issa Malacha. Moshe, you want to say something?
I hear you're saying. Right. You read in here, and I'm just going through the Rashi, and it's just like, oh, okay.
Now, wait a second. I just want to point out something very, very important to you. When the Gemara says that at some sort of later period of time they didn't accept Purim as a day of Issa Malacha, you really have to polish that up, meaning it's an unpolished stone, because it doesn't make any sense. We have a principle that anything that's written in the Megillah is established by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and another Beis Din later on cannot decide, unless they're greater, but they cannot decide to override what was established by an earlier Beis Din. So this whole premise here that everything depends upon the Kabbalah of Klal Yisrael, that has to be understood. What do I mean? You have certain cases where Beis Din will enact something, and they'll allow you, they'll allow the people of Israel to decide. I call it, again, it's my own, I borrow this from my little knowledge of American law. It's a system of checks and balances, right? There is such a thing. Like, for example, Gemara says at the end of Avodah Zarah, there were various gzeiros that we shouldn't buy things from the goyim, like we shouldn't use their oils and stuff. And at the end of the day, it was Ef Shalom Bo. The Klal Yisrael never accepted that. That's true. But the exception to that rule is something that's written in Tanakh. Once it's written in Tanakh, it has the status of Divrei Kabbalah, and Divrei Kabbalah is Kedivrei Torah Dam. It's almost like a Doraisa. Like, for example, the Machaber says that an Onen on Purim will eat and drink, meaning eat meat and drink wine. And the question is why? I mean, an Onen is enjoyed from eating meat and drinking wine. Why are you allowing him to do it? So the Mechaber writes in Shulchan Aruch, because Divrei Torah, Divrei Kabbalah, Divrei Torah Dam. You know, his prohibition against drinking wine is at the best, it's the Rabbanah. But the Torah itself, so to speak, again, when I say the Torah, I don't mean the Torah, I mean Divrei Kabbalah, requires of him to drink wine and eat meat. But you see clearly that the status of Purim is goes way beyond just a takonis hachamim. It's written in the Megillah, and as such, it's encoded in Divrei Kabbalah, and not in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, but it's in Tanakh. And it's very difficult to understand how this business about, yeah, we did accept it, we didn't accept it, we took Malach, we didn't take Malach. I mean, how does that work? If it's Divrei Kabbalah, and the Megillah says that it was established as a yontiv with an Issa Malach, how do you do away with that?
Rashi touches upon what you're saying. Part of the city should have been like that was his Issa. In other words, he was part of the city, and yet he was outside the city. Okay, so then there's Filotema Bar Yoma Have. Garcia, if you want to say he's a Bar Yoma Have, Garcia Rebbe, Shinata Netia Bayom Shikarubo, Shikarubo. If I'm reading this right. But Shikarubo. The Nata, the Daka. Right?
Yeah.
That's the question. Is it a Yom Tov or not, right? Shasur b'siyat malacha. How crack it? Because there's a pasuk that says, Simcha v'mishtevi Yom Tov, right?
Right.
The Ktiv Meikara Kodom Kabbalah. That was said, Aval b'shas Kabbalah, lo kiblu aleim ela Simcha v'mishtevi Asur v'hesped, the times.
Okay. So listen to me, Moshe. This Rashi would make 100% sense, as I said before, if we're talking about a takonis hakom, meaning hakom kibim masakim something, and let's see if the people will receive it. Like, for example, hakom wanted to institute an isur of shemen and akum, okay. And at the end of the day, we didn't accept it. But if we're talking about Divrei Kabbalah, with regard to Divrei Kabbalah, there's no such thing as did you accept it, did you accept it. Divrei Kabbalah is written in the Tanakh, so this Rashi has to be understood.
So what's the next one? How does that fit in what you're saying?
Right, no, I'm saying that Rashi is obviously operating within the framework, and so is the sugya of a Takonis Bezdin. And as I said before, and I'll repeat it a million times over, Takonis Bezdin is subject to the law of the system of checks and balances. But we're not talking about a Takonis Bezdin. If it was a Takonis Bezdin, it would be a pure Derabbanan, and it would not be Midivrei Kabbalah. So if it's Midivrei Kabbalah,
that's what I'm telling you.
Rashi's telling you it's not Midivrei Kabbalah.
That's not what Rashi's saying. That the pasuk in Megillah is telling
you. And that's why it's not Midivrei Kabbalah. Well, understand how Rashi's working overtime. If not for this Rashi and the whole sugya, we would have said, what, as we say in modern Hebrew, Makitov, gives you the right to say, oh, I object, I don't want to accept this Gzeira. Takonis Chacham, you could do such a thing, but not Midivrei Kabbalah. So that's what I'm telling you, that what we have to say is that the Gemara goes out of its way to tell you that the Issa Malacha is not together Divrei Kabbalah, because the Megillah itself omits Yontif at some point. You know, it's initially the Megillah mentions Yontif.
You use the word Yom Tov.
Yom Tov, which means Issa Malacha, right? That's our code word for Issa Malacha in the Megillah.
Right.
And then the Megillah itself drops it. So what it means is that somehow, and again, this needs a lot of work, the Pesukim of his whole has whole pieces on this Gemara. You know, I'm just telling you the tip of the iceberg, you know. And if you want, we could take that up as a separate topic. It would take us hours. I usually give this on my Wednesday night evening shiur. But the Brisker Rav asks, what happened over here? We're talking about Divrei Kabbalah. There's no such thing as, did they accept it, did they not accept it? So what we have to work out over here is that this Issa Malacha doesn't come under Divrei Kabbalah. It comes under what we call Takonis Bezdin. You know, otherwise, this whole sugya makes no sense. So now the Gemara asks, Ela Rav, my timer, light a lahu gavra. So why did Rav put a whammy on this person who was planting flax? After all, we never accepted upon ourselves an Issa Malacha. So the Gemara says that there is such a thing as a different kind of Kabbalah. This is already on another level. It's as far as the day of Purim is concerned, after now, there's no Issa Malacha. Purim doesn't generate an Issa Malacha. It's as far as the essence of the day is concerned. But the Jewish people accepted upon themselves in certain areas, not all over the world, but in certain locations, they accepted upon themselves a minhag, let's dedicate Purim to what we have to dedicate, and don't go to work on Purim. And therefore, Dvar Ma'amutar V'Achirim Nogarim Iser, there's a principle that you're not allowed to be mocked here, you're not allowed to take a lenient activity or behavior pattern in the presence of those who accept it, who accept it for themselves, a stringency. That's called locus code divine. You don't want to make my locus. And you may say, well, you know, for me, like for example, an Israeli chutzpah. Again, I don't want to get into this.
I'm
just trying to give this a bit of those. Please don't quote this. But an Israeli chutzpah, if it goes to what the public do, that's called a fair bargain by the Eastern, right? He may say, well, just they took it on themselves and put it to the gym every day. Why does that obligate me? But nevertheless, you're not allowed to behave publicly in a way that shows leniency. But so in the area where Rav saw this guy do Malach HaKurim, they didn't do Malach HaKurim. Again, not because of the essence of the day, but because they were, so for example, how this guy was planting his flax on Purim, given in a different location, we wouldn't have had a problem with it. Rav wouldn't have put a whack on it. But it's a principle called Torah on the Torah, I can't know the Rebbe Yisrael, to be honest with you. The Rebbe, you don't know, for example, in Rebbe's location, they never accept upon themselves even a minnow of Yisrael. So therefore, Rebbe was allowed to publicly claim on Purim itself. So again, in the initial Sugya of the Mishnah, if there was an Yisrael, so if Rebbe planted it once again on another day, or he was a Tveria, so he planted on the dollar. But now the person knows, Rebbe would plant even on Tveria. Why? Because in Tveria, they never accepted even a minnow. There was only a minnow to do an Yisrael. Ibai Sengul Yolam Nahu, it could be that Rebbe himself and the people in Tveria had that minnow. And the Gemara sort of asked him on a historical point, was there a minhag in Tveria not to do Malacha? But Revi Natiya Sosel Simcha Nata. Okay, now here we have to know that there are two types of Isur Malacha. One is an Isur Malacha, which I could define as per se. What I mean by per se, the Malacha itself is awesome. Don't tell me why you're doing the Malacha, you know, and if you're doing the Malacha. For example, on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you can't do Malacha and tell me, well, I have a very good reason why I'm doing Malacha. It's awesome, you know. Again, the Gluck Nefesh is different, but there's another type of Isur Malacha, which is what I call not Usur per se, but rather it's a means to an end. What do I mean by a means to an end? Like, I'll give you a classical example. If you learn Masechta Moed Katan, there's an Isur Malacha on an Avel. And the Gemara establishes that the Isur Malacha on an Avel is because of Hesech Hadas. We don't want him to get distracted with other things. And it could be that, as far as Rosh Chodesh, the women, I don't know if you know this, women accepted upon themselves an Isur Malacha. That's also Begeder Hesech Hadas. As far as Chol HaMoed is concerned, it's very complicated to define Isur Malacha and Chol HaMoed. Is it Mishum Hesech Hadas, or the Malacha is also per se? I'll give another example. We don't do Malacha after Shabbos before Avdol. So what is that? Is it separate Isur Malacha? I can't turn on the lights? No. That's because I don't want to get distracted from my Chiyuv Avdol. I want to make Avdol as soon as I can. So many times, the Isur Malacha is not an Isur per se. There's nothing inherently wrong with the Malacha, but the Rabbanon instituted an Isur Malacha in order to put you in the right mindset. It's a goal-oriented Isur Malacha. And that's what we have here with regard to Purim. We want you to dedicate yourself on Purim to the mitzvah of Purim, and not to be distracted by Malacha. You know, you go to work and you come back at the end of the day, and then all of a sudden it's time for a Sudas Purim and it's already Shkia. You know what I'm saying? Well, so the difference is that if there's no Isur Malacha per se, then we could be much more lenient in certain cases of need, and we could override the Isur Malacha. And that's called Netiya Shel Simcha. Where do we find this kind of a concept of an Isur Malacha, which is, as I said before, it's not an Isur Malacha per se. There's nothing wrong with the Maisa Malacha. It's just that the Malacha gets you preoccupied and distracted on Tainus. The Masechta Tainus is built on a whole system of, you know, if there's no rain, so we start on one date, you know, 2 weeks after Cheshvan, and then in Kislev, and then we go to this Tainus and that Tainus and that Tainus. When we get to the Spitz, you know, in Kasmashon, after all the fast days, you know, it's still not coming down. You know, thank God for us today, it's not coming down. But we should I shouldn't say that because the Kohen Gadol lifnayim lifnim on Yom Kippur, we've been spalled al tekabel tefilas over drunk, right? But in any event, He says the following, because now we have a Mishnah of Ru Elu. There was a whole system of 13 fast days. You'll see this all in Rashi. I'm just giving you the Sikkum because of our time limitation. And Bezdin made a Gzera that as a result of the fact that there's no rain after 13 different fast days, Adailo Menu, there was no response from Hashem, is then Mematin B'masu Matan B'binyan U'benetia B'erusin U'benesuin. Rabosai, this language of a Mishnah in Tainus appears elsewhere, word for word, in a different context. Anybody know what I'm referring to? Rosh Chodesh Av. It says, "Mishenichnas Av mematin v'simcha, and mematin v'masumatin v'binyan v'netiya v'erusim v'nesu." So like, a lot of my talmidim will ask me, Rabbi, am I allowed to go to work during the 9 days? You know, so some people want to travel during the 9 days for work and so forth. So I basically tell them the following: look, technically it's okay. You know, you're doing it for the right reasons, and it's okay. But if you can reschedule some of these travels, you know, to a different time, that's the best. That's a better idea. So the same thing applies after these 13 tiniest went by, and God hasn't responded, unfortunately. So then is mematim, b'masu matin, and we try to limit ourselves in terms of business deals. And by the way, in terms of the Chodesh Av, that's the question with regard to going, you know, going to business deal with a guy, you know, because this is not an auspicious time for Klal. And b'netiyah. Now look at this. Netiyah means that this is not the right time to plant trees. You know, God is not listening to our prayers at this point. And we want to go out and invest in trees. You know, trees is symbolic of, you know, going on in a new enterprise. This is not an auspicious time. It's not a time for Erisin. It's not a time for Nisuin. Again, with regard to Erisin, we're going to find a lot of coolers, which is called Shem Yikad Menu Acher, and so forth and so on. Oh, Vitani Allah. But the Brisa says that this prohibition that was instituted by the Bezdin after the 13th fast is not ironclad. And it has exceptions. For example, binyan, when the Mishnah says binyan, the Bryce says it's only a binyan for living purposes. In other words, I want to build a house for my own as a domicile. That we don't do after Bezda makes this Gzera of the Titans. However, but binyan, shel simcha, that's a whole different story. Just 1 second, I'm sorry. I got to read this Gemara one more time. So, Tani Allah, so the Bryce says that binyan. I'm sorry. I made one important mistake. Then I'm sorry. The Gemara, our sugya. Okay, it's a little bit sensitive. See if you can follow me on this. I have to use all my pedagogical skills here because this is very confusing. The concept of binyan shel simcha in our context, in terms of why Rebbe allowed himself, permitted himself to plant trees, binyan shel simcha is a kula. Do you follow me? It's a push lahaka for the greater good of a netiyah shel simcha. But paradoxically, this is where life gets a little complicated for us, binyan shel simcha is also a chumra in a different context, not in terms of Purim, but in terms of kindness. Why? Because a binyan shel simcha, as great as the simcha is, it becomes more and more antithetical to the element of despair or the solemn element of a tainus, of a fasting. So that's what it says the following: that binyan shel simcha has to be curtailed. Why are we curtailing binyan shel simcha? Because this is not an appropriate time for simcha. Or, for example, in the Tia Shal Simcha. So again, our Gemara is using this Brisa to indicate that there is such a concept called the Tia Shal Simcha. But our Gemara wants to use this concept, Lakula, to justify why Rebbe allowed this in the Tia. But the Brisa in Tainis wants to use this in the Tia Shal Simcha as an Iser, as a Chumrah. Okay, Eza Binyan Shal Simcha is a bona base chasnus lubno. He's building a house. Again, we have to figure out what base chasnus is. Does it mean just for the purpose of a chuppah? You know, so they set up a special bias for the chuppah, or it means it was his permanent house. Let's assume it's only for the purpose of chuppah. That's called base chasnus. The Eza Netiyah Shal Simcha, and what is called the Netiyah Shal Simcha, Zanotea Avurniki, Shalmalachim. Avurniki is the Aramaic word for a tree Shalmalachim of kings, that the Malachim used to plant certain trees that were very, very special, very expensive. And they used these trees because of the structure and the beautiful nature of the tree, that they would bend it over and they would create a tzel ra. They would create a great shadow, or not shadow, what's the word I'm looking for? Shade from the heat of the sun. So in any event, what we have here in this braisa is a definition of what's netiyah shel simcha, and this netiyah shel simcha is prohibited on tinus, on this right high powered tinus, and on Purim. Okay.
This is now, Rashi explains it's more like you put up this tree-like structure, for the chuppah.
Right. Okay.
So now you're preparing you're getting ready for the wedding.
Right. So now let's get back to Rebbe. Right. The Gemara says, let's just rewind a few lines up to the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rebbe netiyah shel simcha nata. Okay. And what does this mean, netiyah shel simcha nata? So let me just read to you the Hebrew translation. He writes the following. It says, "L'masha b'nei ha'makom nagu iser malacha." He says, maybe the people would be noeg in iser malacha. And he says the following: usually, if the people would be noeg, right? That was Ebi saying the nahu, right? We all nahu. So why was Rebbe so lenient? We have a principle, as we said before, "Dvarma mutarim v'achirim nagu v'em iser." And you're not allowed to be matir b'fneihem. So why was he matir netiyah in front of the people, the presence of people who were knowing by Isur? So the answer is mishum shenata netiyah shel simcha. Oh, and he says the following. This is the line that I wanted to share with you. Came on shebet purim yom simcha, who the whole nature of purim is the exact flipped opposite of tainus, right, of the avails of tainus. He says, since on Purim we are interested in simcha, therefore you mutter lintoa netiyah shel simcha. Right? Just like we find in netiyah shel simcha and tainus, there's a category called netiyah shel simcha that's prohibited on a tainus because the nature of tainus is antithetical to simcha. So too with regard to Purim, any isim malach is limited to a secular, mundane, daily, ordinary simcha. Netiyah or malacha. But if your malacha is a netiyah shel simcha, then it's not antithetical to what? To Purim, because Purim is a day of simcha. So we can integrate and reconcile the simcha of Purim with the simcha of building a netiyah shel simcha. So again, Rabbi Moshe, it comes back to the bottom line that even if there is an Isur malacha on Purim, it's not an Isur malacha per se. It's not an absolute, all-inclusive Isur malacha. It's an Isur malacha which will distract you or undermine your ability to dedicate yourself totally to simcha. But lo yitzur, we found a malacha which would enhance your simcha. Like, let's say, for example, your child wants you to paint his face on Purim, you know, so that they can have a masquerade on Purim. Or, you know, you have to tie the girl as, you know, she wears this special costume on Purim. So I'm not going to say, well, you know what, Purim is also the malacha, it's a keshe shel kayoma, or whatever it might be, and I'm not going to do it. The answer is no. That's all for the sake of simcha. It enhances the simcha. Oh, now, let's just see where we're holding here. Oh, good, we have a few more minutes. Chizkiya. Do you remember that Chizkiya instituted in Tveria that we should read the Megillah on 2 days? So the Gemara says, Gufa. Now this is a problem because Chizkiya seems to be contradicting a pasuk in Tanakh. Okay, this pasuk is in Sefer Yoshua. Gufa, let's go back to Chizkiya. Kari b'tveri bar beisar b'chamesha sar shem safkali mukefes kol nos Yeshua ben nuni ilo. Umi misafkalei milsa b'tveria. How could Chizkiya have a suffix about Tveria? Vaksiv, it says in Sefer Yeshua, when they came into the land that they divided up the boundaries of the land, and Yeshua gave Shevet Naphtali 19 cities, and amongst the 19 cities, 16 of them were Mukafos Choma. They were walled cities. Again, it's at the time Yeshua. And on the list is Tveria. So how Chizkiya doubt about it? Well, Rabos, I went through the list and I didn't find Tveria on
the list. Didn't find Tveria.
No.
That's because
there's a code word here. And the Gemara is going to go back and forth, exactly what that code word means. Does it mean Tveria? Or does it mean Tzipori? Does it mean Tzfat? I mean, we're going to have many, many possibilities. So what does it say in the pasuk? It says, "V'ori mivtzar hatzodim tsar v'chamas rakas v'kineris." Okay, so here this is a partial list of the cities that were well fortified at the time of Yoshua, given to Shevet Naphtali. One of them is called Rakas, v'kaimolon, and we know that Rakas zut veria. And therefore, since it's listed at the time of Yoshua as a walled city, then certainly Rakas is Tveria. Now, Rabosa, I was thinking that maybe the Gemara has no cash at all, because maybe Chizkiya lived at the time when the walls fell down. So it's true, it was a walled city at the time of Yoshua, but now it's not a walled city. So that's not a cash at all, because if you remember the sugi that we had above, back on Daf Gimel, the Gemara says, Hashalo Choma, meaning if it had a Choma at the time of Yoshua Ben Nun, that makes it into a walled city. Slicha? Hainu time of the Mesafkale, Mishum Dechad Gisa Shura Diyama Havi. The Gemara says that what was the reason for the Safek? Because although Tveria, as indicated by the Pasuk in Yoshua, was walled on three sides, but on the fourth side, where it was exposed to the Yam, to the Yam HaKineres, there was no wall. It was absolutely open. And now the Gemara is going to go into a whole analysis. What's the status of a city that's walled on three sides, but it's exposed on one side? Now we're going to think about it in terms of security. We're going to think about it in terms of being vulnerable, that they can attack you from that one side. What is the status of that city? So Gemara says, Ihochi, if you're going to tell me Tveri was exposed on one of its sides, is Amai Mesafkale? Why would Chizkiya have even a Havamina that we should read the Megillah on the 15th? That's not called Mukefes Choma. Vare Lav Mukefes Choma. The Gemara right now understands that Mukefes Choma means you have to have a Choma. If there's no Choma there, then it's not called Mukefes Choma. And I'll prove it to you from a Braisa. Now, the premise of the Gemara's Disanya, that dalet of the Disanya, is that we have an analogy between what's called Ir Mukefes Choma, that's the end of Sefer Vayikra, and Ir Mukefes Choma in Purim. In Mukefes Choma and Vayikra, within a walled city, the buyer has rights that go beyond that of the seller. What do I mean? If it wasn't a walled city, then the seller has unbelievable rights. He can buy it back for up until the Yovel. And if he can't buy it back up to the Yovel, he'll get it back at Yovel. But in the case of a walled city, the buyer has greater rights. And the buyer says to the seller, I'll give you up to 12 months in this walled city, and if you can't pay me back the money that I gave you, you know, to buy this field or this house, then it's chalut. Chalut means that there's no way of forcing me. The sale is absolutely binding. Le'olam vod. And there in the pasuk, I'll retell you the whole pasuk. It says, "Im lo yigoyel ad malos lo shana tmima." If the mocher, the seller, could not come up with the money to redeem his field within an entire year, v'kama bayis asher ve'ir asher lo choma litzmisus lo yetsa biyovel. In other words, if he doesn't make it before the 12-month period, then the buyer is the lucky, he lucks out, and he can tell the seller, go fly a kite. And there's not even a din of yovel. Okay. So now the Gemara is darshaning in this particular braisa, what exactly do we mean by an ear mukefes choma in the parasha of Bate Ari Choma? And Gemara says that it means that velo shur igar. Okay, what happens if you have a city, but there's no proper choma around the city? Like, for example, let's say there are houses that surround the entire city on the outer boundary, and all the roofs of these houses are attached to each other. So it's one continuous roof. So now you really have, in a sense, if you're outside of the city, you have a wall to face because all these houses are attached to each other. Mar says, nay, that's not called a choma. That just happens to be that the batim, because they're situated one near the other, they have a connection, a continuous flow. And the Gemara is going to darshan the pasuk by in this parasha. It says, and I'll read again the whole pasuk. It says, "Ubate achatzerim asher ein lahem chom asaviv." What constitutes a bate chatzer? Bate chatzer is the opposite of a bate ir chom. It means that's an open city. It's ein lahem chom asaviv. Saviv means that it's completely surrounded on all sides, all four sides. Prat says the Rice excludes Tveria, Shiyama Chomosa. Then in the fourth side, there's no Choma there. It's not a Choma Sub, it's only the sea. It's only the Kinneret. Oh. So the Gemara says, that's not a Kashi. You're presuming an equation between Bate Arichoma and Purim. They're two dinim, they're two different dinim. L'inyan Bate Arichoma Loma Safkala, you're right. There was never a doubt that Tveri does not have the status of Bate Arichoma. Why? Because it's exposed on one side. And if it's not Savi, but Kikom Esafkale, what was the issue of Chizkiyah? And he vacillated with regard to Purim. L'yimikra Megillah, what's the status of this Choma? And what's the difference between Prozim and Mukafi? Meaning, is this halacha that's inherent and absolute in the Choma? No, the Choma here is only indicative of where the miracle took place. My cross and my mukafin, what's the difference between a city that's open and a city that's surrounded, that's walled? The Chsiv Kaviva, which is relevant to which day of Purim you're going to read the Megillah. And the answer is, Yishum Dahani Miglu Vahani Lo Miglu. Because the prozim are exposed, and if they're exposed, then the enemy is going to come and attack it, so you don't have that sense of security. Whereas if it's surrounded by a wall, then lo miglu, and it's exposed, it's vulnerable. So again, is it prozim or is it mukafim? And it all depends on the military security of the city. So when is it considered prozim? That's called megulin. Vahonami migli. You know, it's the attackers could come from the sea. Oh, and therefore Tveria would have the status of prozim. It doesn't have total security. It's not what do you call it? Airtight. What's the word I'm looking for? Hermetically sealed. Excellent. It's not hermetically sealed. Oh, Dilma, should we say no? Mishum dahani mignu, vahani lo mignu, vahonami migli. What does prozim mean? Prozim means that it's a city that's very easily conquered. And Mukaf is a city that's a real challenge. So it means like this, that if you have a fourth side, which is the seaside, and that's exposed, then the people could defend themselves, they can protect themselves. If ships will come from abroad and attack them, they set up a defense right there. And so this was the suffix of Chizkiya, meaning, on the one hand, total security you won't have in Tveria, because there is a possibility to penetrate into the city for the enemies to penetrate, even without breaking walls. But on the other hand, the city is really, on the land surface, is completely secure, and therefore it has the status of Mukaf Choma. They may attack you from the open side. So the answer is, we'll find a defense for that open side, because we'll station our troops for defense right there on the seaside. Now, the Gemara at this point, and with this we'll try to wrap it up, goes through various cities and what their status is. So for example, Rav Asi Kori Megillah Behutzal Be'ar Besar Chameshisar. Rav Asi, already this at the time of the Gemara, this is already second generation to Amoraim, he was in doubt about the status of a place called Hutzal. And again, if we had a Schneinzel here, maybe he would tell us, give us a picture of where Hutzal is, if we know. I don't know if we know, the archaeologists maybe would know. The Mesafkele, Imu Kefes Chob, Mos Yeshua, He Lo. Others say, Omer Vasi, Hai Hutzal, the base Binyamin, Mukefes Chomi, Mos Yeshua. He knew that there was a place called Hutzal, the base Binyamin. That was the name of the place. Apparently, it was in the Shevet Binyamin. I don't know. We have a lot of areas today where they do archaeology in Shevet Binyamin. In any event, he knew, and according to this version, he identified Hutzal as Mukefes Choma Mimos Yoshua. Oh, now the Gemara goes back to this, to the question of Rakas. What was the status of Rakas? So on the one hand, we said that Rakas was listed in Shevet Naphtali, in Sefer Yoshua, in Shevet Naphtali as a walled city. But on the other hand, we said it was exposed on the fourth side near the Yam. So the question is there another way, perhaps, of interpreting Rakas? Remember I told you before that this whole sugya revolves around what the word Rakas, that city called Rakas, refers. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ki avina tali, when I was a young boy, amina milsa de she'inla le savaya, the elderly scholars, and there was something that I asked the elderly scholars, now we're turning to Avav Amin Aleph, vishtakach kavase, and they agreed to what I said. I was a young boy, and yet they agreed to what I said. And these are the things that I said. I said to them that Chamas, let's go back to the Pasuk again, right? The Pasuk lists Chamas, Rakas, and Kineres. Uh-huh. So I said that Chamas was Tiberias.
Very, very good.
Interesting. So again, it doesn't really help us much because even if Chamas is Tiberias, it's still listed as a walled city. V'loma nikra shma Chamas, al shum chame Tiberias. Interesting that the word Chamas is another conjugation of the word chame. Right, the hot springs of Tiberias. To this day, people go to Tiberias for the hot springs. Rakas. Now, we thought Rakas was a reference to Tiberias. And the Gemara later on is going to show you why we thought Rakas was a reference to Tiberias. But Rabbi Yochanan, in his youth, said that Zu Tzipori, also a city up north. V'lama nikrei shma Rakas mishum de miyalda kiraksa denaro. Okay, this is a city, Tzipori, which is elevated. It's elevated on top of a mountain range. And that's called Raksa Denaro. Now, Raksa Denaro means the shore. Now, on the shore, what happens is that when the water, you know, the waves sort of like hit up against the shore itself is a little bit lifted, and that causes the break of the waves. The waves break. So this word, which is called Rakas, means Raksa Denaro. Okay, that's the elevated part of the shore of the river, the river bank, if you will. And Kinerazu Gnosar. Now Gnosar is a famous place in Shas for the beautiful fruits. Yeah, Peinot Gnosar. V'lom Nikrashma Kineret Mishum de Mesike Peri. Its fruits are so sweet. Kikola de Kinri, like the fruits are compared here, interesting, to the sounds of beautiful music, the music of a kinar, which is a fiddle. Okay, so now what we're up to is Omar Rava. We'll stop here. Rava's going to try to prove to us that there's no question that Rakas is Tiberias, but Rabbi Yochanan says that I told the people in my youth that Rakas is Tzipori, and they accepted it, you know. So we want to know exactly what Rakas is. Okay, then. So again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Chamas is Tiberias. Okay, and that's called Chami Tiberias. Rakas is a reference not to Tiberias, but rather to Tzipori, and that's because Tzipori is a little bit elevated. Okay, then, gentlemen, I wish you a great day.